there, and welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's a beautiful Monday morning, March 21st, 2022. He is Tristan Happy Cockcroft, slayer of myriad fantasy leagues. Kyle Soppy produces and researches with the heart of a champion. And I'm Eric Carabel, just here to read the ads. All right, fantasy baseball drafts are coming. On today's show, we'll talk about the free agent signings and trades of the past week or so. We'll see what Tristan's up to. He's always smiling and happy. And then we'll get Kyle in here to get your answers to your questions from Twitter. We call them hash browns. They should be called hashtags, but I screwed that up a few years ago. So now we call them hash browns. And since we're always hungry, Tristan and I, for a good breakfast, let us know where we can find good hash browns in our area. Tristan, how are you this fine day? Hope you had a nice weekend.
Actually, yeah, without the travel, a good recommendation on local hash browns would be fantastic. The best hash browns in the Northeastern region. I want to hear this. I want your replies on that. What do you say?
I'd say that'd be good.
We help the listeners. They can help us.
So at least they can do. Yeah, and then we'll meet up for a late breakfast one day, but yeah. Obviously not on a Monday or a Thursday because those days
we're here. Yes.
That's what we're doing. We're doing podcasts for the people on those days. We're going to start out today's podcast, Tristan. Now, spring training games have already started, but we have not seen Carlos Correa or Trevor Story play for their new teams yet. How about the teams that they chose? We did not predict this one. Trevor Story playing second base for the Boston Red Sox and Carlos Correa playing shortstop for 1 year, likely, with the Minnesota Twins. Which is more surprising to you? And who would you rather have? Because Story leaving Colorado, you can make the case for Correa. I don't think I will, but your take on these two signings.
Yeah, I think the Correa one's more surprising. And not in that the Twins went after a shortstop, because Story was one that there were little hints about. I really didn't expect Correa would land there. Really didn't at all. I never had them on the radar. I could see them getting Story. Boston getting Story doesn't completely blow me away. It's odd because they have Xander Bogaerts at shortstop. Of course, the contractual stuff involved, and either player could make some decisions about their middle infield. I kind of like the landing spot for Trevor Story. I actually do. Of any of the places that wasn't Coors Field, I feel better about Boston's lineup and Fenway Park's confines for his style of play than I might most anywhere else. There's a couple other places I would also like. Well, we can dig a little more into those park numbers if we like. Who would I take first? Probably.
You rank Correa quite a bit better than Story. I assume you're going to update Correa. That.
Well, it's going to be now 27 overall spots apart and 3 shortstop spots.
So you have Correa in your 6th round, and you're going to have Story in your 8th? 7th round.
7th and 10th.
So I have Story as a potential top 50 player, and you have him only top 100. What's the difference? Now, is this because of
the
points
gameplay
versus Roto?
Yeah, that's all it is.
So tell us the difference here in points leagues, why you don't like Story. Is it because he doesn't take walks? Is that what the reason is?
It's so...
because he does take walks.
Right.
And
well,
in Roto, I like the 20 K's. Steals, and it's you don't care about the steals.
It's just the K's. The steals don't matter nearly as much in the points leagues because you only get 1 point for them. So there's a much lesser weight for stolen bases in a points league than there is in Roto. The strikeouts are a huge penalty. That's a much more impactful thing in points than it is in Roto. That said, I put him 95. I put him, 11th? 11th month shortstops. There's some multi-eligibles, I think, ahead of him that are kind of messing with that a little bit. I am tempted to put him where Correa is, and I could tell you that the ceiling is up in that ballpark, and maybe it's even on the fringe of the top 50, even in that style, even with the criticisms I had because of the way Fenway Park plays to his bat. It could inflate the doubles. It could inflate potentially the triples. I doubt it hitting it off the Green Monster. He's going to get to third base on those, but... let's just say it inflates the doubles, helps for point leagues. By the way, BABIP, did you know which is the second park in baseball? And it's really not close first to second, and it's really not close second to third in BABIP among parks. It's Fenway.
Is it Fenway? Because I would assume that by asking me that question, that's the answer.
Yeah. But did you know it was by that much? Like, Fenway is very clearly the second best ballpark for BABIP. And it's...
I mean, Story had some bad luck BABIP last season that you can't really say why. Obviously... too many ground balls a little bit, but I just refuse to believe anymore that good hitters will struggle when they leave Denver. Nolan Arenado did not struggle last year. He didn't hit 300, but he hit 30-something home runs. And DJ LeMahieu won a batting title and had a 26-homer year after leaving Coors Field. I think Trevor Story is going to have a great season. I have him as a borderline top 50 guy in roto leagues because I expect 25-plus homers, 275 average, and 20 stolen bases. And I don't see a lot of middle infielders that could do that.
Yeah, there's two means of correction to his 2021 numbers that are at play here. One is leaving Coors, and you and I've talked about this many, many times about how you have to deal with the altitude changes. So he's going to be playing at an extremely low altitude. It's one of the largest swings in that direction you could possibly get. And that coupled with the whole, you know, thin air thing that we mention all the time, the home road splits, that's going to work against him. Working form is what you said about BABIP. He struggled in that. He was very unlucky in that last season, and that was due some positive correction. I would argue it might be nearly as much of a correction upwards there as it is negative going out of Coors. And I look at that stat line he had last year, and why couldn't he just repeat that? And if he does, he goes right to the number that you said. Very good roto player. I'm with you. I think it's an easy case to make. He's a top 50 guy in roto.
I agree. Let's talk about the middle infield spot. So Story's going to add second base eligibility after 10 games in ESPN fantasy leagues because he's going to be the second baseman and Xander Bogaerts will remain a shortstop. It might be like a Jeter A-Rod thing because I think Story's a better defender, but that doesn't matter in real life because it's all about loyalty and, you know, stuff like that and not hurting feelings. So Bogaerts will stay at short. Story will add eligibility. I mean, I'd rather have Bogaerts than Story, but not by a lot, man. I mean, I understand Story steals bases, but Bogaerts should hit around 300 as he does every year. But give me your take on middle infield now, because shortstop looks really deep to me. And I think second base is deep as well. Like in comparison to say like first base and third base, it's pretty even among the four infield positions. So if we're kind of previewing middle infield today, I don't think you have to target a shortstop or a second baseman early in these drafts or auctions, because like first base gets bad after the top 200 too, doesn't it?
It does, and much more so than we remember. People who played fantasy for a while think of it as first base is loaded with big boppers, and it's not quite so much the case anymore. Third base, I believe, has gotten a lot better in those in some fashion. For second and short is full of a lot of very young, talented, elite players who have, if everything clicks, MVP caliber potential. That's something we never saw in the past. So I look at the list even for points, and there's 12 guys who have that eligibility there who are top 100 players for me overall. At second base, I've got only 10 of them. The thing with second base compared to shortstop, I would argue it is a little bit thinner of the two. And that's more that none of those guys strike me as, other than Trey Turner, maybe you could make the case for your Ozzy Albies or your Jose Altuves, that top shelf MVP carrier fantasy team alone ceilings.
Two names for your shortstop rankings, and I want your take on them here. Mm-hmm. Fernando Tatis Jr., Bobby Witt Jr.
Yes.
I feel like we're over-ranking Tatis, who we think is missing half the season.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're under-ranking Witt, who may play half the season. So, like, if you view it in that sense, like, Witt should be much better than a 15th-round pick, but Tatis should not be a 7th or 8th-round pick. Is that a fair thing to say?
It's a very fair thing to say because I have no idea what to rank Fernando Tatis. I just had a conversation with my good friend and runs my home leagues that you could just give him any number you want. I mean, he's one of the most amazing talents I have ever seen in the games he gives you. And yet the risk of him missing time this year is probably as high as it could be for a player with his level of talent that I've ever seen playing this game. Any year, any season, I can tell you that he's a top 50 overall pick with me with confidence. And I can tell you, I want absolutely no part of him whatsoever. I just don't have any idea. I mean, we have to rank him somewhere. I put him 83 because I think he is that good a player, but you're right. It's a very simple case to make that he's lower. Witt, the biggest problem I have with Witt's situation is I think he makes the team. I really hate the fact that the Royals have now said that they want to put him at third base to start the season. I just don't like dealing with shifting positions at this stage of a career, throwing him in there, having him get adapted to major league play. You put out Adalberto Mondesi at shortstop. He's going to inevitably get hurt at some point. And then what are you going to do? Move Witt over there and just mess with him a little bit more? So there's just a little bit there that bugs me about it that makes me not want to put him in the top hunt.
What are they doing with Nicky Lopez? I thought he was a shortstop.
Lopez is the second baseman.
Of course he is.
And Whit Merrifield, I think, is the right fielder or something like that. But yeah, that was what Matheny had said.
That's what he said. Okay. Because Nicky Lopez played a nice shortstop last season and he got on base.
Declared Mondesi. Mondesi's a shortstop.
All right. Well, that's interesting.
But this is what I mean. The fact that you said that, I think you therefore have the same kind of concerns that I do. It's like, what are you?
I'm not going to end up with Tatis or Witt in leagues. I have Tatis in two keeper hot new leagues. I didn't realize that until I looked this morning when I have the draft at the same time this week. And I thought, I'm in trouble right away. Like, I have him as a $50 keeper on one of those teams. And he's out half the season.
How did you know when you made the decision, though?
Of course I didn't know. We didn't know until a week ago because of the lockout. But Tatis is probably going to be on my do not draft list because I don't want to take the chance. You know, if he misses half the season, Acuna, his situation changed in the past week. Whereas they said he was not going to play and probably until mid May. Now they're saying he'll play in early April, but he won't play the outfield.
Right.
So I feel like these teams are making things up as they go along because of the shortened spring training and the lockout, and they couldn't talk to their players. Nobody knew that Chris Sale had a broken rib. I mean, this is incredible what's happening. This is a multi-billion-dollar industry, and the teams don't even know if their players are healthy or not. Mm-hmm. And Tatis was asked, was it the motorcycle accident? And he says, which one? Padres didn't even know he had any, and he had more than one. It's just amazing. It's like a free-for-all in sports right now. But overall, middle infield. So I would agree with you. Shortstop is better than second base. There's a lot of top shortstops here. Some interesting names as we get a little bit deeper. You tell me. You like, you don't like. Well, I'm sure you like more than I do. Gleyber Torres, what are you doing with him?
I'm letting him come to me in drafts. I think there will be some rebound. I really don't want to lean too much on the tiny sample he had in September where he was moved back to second base and was successful. It didn't show the power that he had in the past, but over the past 2 years, he did show some significant improvement in terms of the plate discipline. So I'm cautiously optimistic.
Javier Baez, points league. You rank him terribly. I'm sure it's because of the strikeouts, but in a roto league, in my leagues, isn't he top 100?
Yes, I do believe he is. He might well be, because I was running this the other day, he might well be the number one player most adversely affected by the shift to points-based scoring. He is a truly terrible points league player. By comparison to Roto, you can't even build a top 100 case. He'd have to put up monstrous batting average and home run improvement to get there.
Jonathan India, have we already seen his best? Which is fine. But have we already seen it?
That I see where you're going. It's that is a damning description of him long term. I don't think that's his best year of his career. Is it for this year? He probably has some room to give back just based on it being sophomore years, people being a little bit more prepared for him. But I think he's a very good player with one of the higher basements of any second year player that I've seen in several seasons. He fills categories. He's just not elite in any one. I'd say he's pretty close.
Gavin Lux, late round sleeper or just ignore it?
I'd say I lean towards late round sleeper, but you know what it is? I think he's a very good player who, when he gets time to play, can put forth some tremendous fantasy value, but there's no path to play. And we've learned, you and I know this. We shouldn't be saying the phrase no path to playing time. I mean, do we want to get in that debate?
No, because there's always a path to playing time. I mean, somebody gets hurt or somebody slumps or, who knows about Bellinger? I mean, Chris Taylor can play everywhere. I feel like they're not trying to get Gavin Lux playing time, though, which is weird.
The way I'll put it, so you and I both did the Tout Wars drafts this weekend. In NL-only Tout, Lux went fairly cheap, but at the time that he was out there, he was being bid up to the extent he was a two-thirds regular, at least in my estimation. I'm not ready to go that far.
All right, other signings this weekend. The Phillies feel like they can have seven designated hitters on the field all at one time. They signed Kyle Schwarber and Nick Castellanos. Obviously, it makes their offense better. Obviously, it doesn't help the defense. Although, really, once you sign one of them, you might as well sign the other because one's playing DH. But my question to you is this. We know they're going to hit. Do you like Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler as much today, assuming Wheeler's healthy, that you did a week ago? Because, I mean, Didi Gregorius is a terrible shortstop. Alec Bohm is a terrible third baseman. There's a terrible left fielder.
Yeah.
There's a terrible center fielder.
Yeah.
There's a terrible first baseman.
Yeah.
It's arguably the worst defensive team of all time. And I'm not really like exaggerating that.
What were the defensive metrics for last year? I
they were like a minus 60 defensive run save.
Yeah. And they downgraded.
Now, there's an article today in The Athletic saying that they can still make the playoffs this way. The Tigers, Dombrowski's Tigers of 2013 and 14 made the playoffs. Terrible defense, fortunate bullpen, couple aces. Phillies had all this. But my question to you is this, for points or Roto, Aaron Nola, Zach Wheeler, and the other guys, Kyle Gibson, who's an extreme ground baller, do you like them a little bit less than you did a week ago?
I like them a little bit less than I did a week ago, yes. And I hate that because I wanted to be all on board on the Aaron Nola rebound bandwagon. Wheeler's has a little bit of the injury question coming into play. I just don't like starting when you're a little bit behind like this. And was it Joe Girardi who was making the comment, or was it Dave Roberts who said about the piggybacking arrangement that if the rosters are expanded, that would make Wheeler more likely to make the roster and just not pitch more than a couple of innings into the games the first few times? I'm not paying the premium for the two of them. If Nola's going to go borderline top 10 at the position and Wheeler's going to go definitely in that, no thanks, I'll pass.
I downgraded Wheeler because of the shoulder and the late start to the preseason, but it sounds like that's not really a thing. Like, he will be ready in early April. Maybe he misses a start, maybe he misses two. Nola obviously was a little bit unlucky with his ERA last season. Home runs, a lot of two-strike stuff. He should get back, but I don't want a ball hit to the left side of the infield. And then, you know, like, I don't know.
Didi was such a good shortstop a few years back. The way the metrics there have regressed over 2 to 3 years is pretty remarkable. And not in a good way. Not the positive definition of that.
Your take on the Freddie Freeman, Matt Olson switcheroo stuff. I'm stunned that Atlanta did not retain Freeman, but can you make a case? Well, you can't. I mean, you'd rather have Freeman in a Roto on a points league. But is Matt Olson underrated? He's leaving Oakland. That's an extreme pitcher's park. And, you know, you wrote about this. I mean, now he's in Atlanta. It's a great lineup. It's a better hitter's park. Yep. I mean, I was tempted to move Matt Olson into, like, round three in Roto.
Yeah, and you know, I think I have it easier for making the positive case for Matt Olson in the points leagues than you do for Roto, but I'm on board with you that I like the player a lot. I'm glad you do too. We've had this debate about him for quite a while, and he did something that I think is getting your attention. He was the major's best improved contact hitter last year of any of the players who played as often as he did. I believe it was not only batting title eligibles, but 300 plus PA guys. And it wasn't one of those pandemic year things. He did it in comparison to 2019 as well. I believe he was number one there, or at least top three. So the fact that he did that, gave up none of the power, he could play very well in that park. Losing that huge, spacious foul territory going over to Atlanta's ballpark, that's going to be a plus for him in terms of batting average. I like the move.
Anything underrated from the weekend? Luke Voit's a Padre now. Jorge Soler is a Marlin now. There probably was a pitcher or two that we haven't discussed that was interesting to us. But anything that happened since our last show that you want to bring up?
We have some, but we could get into it in a segment in a minute or two.
We'll get to relievers.
I was going to say. But I mean, among the other players.
I mean, I wrote about Soler and I was like, all right, he might hit 40 home runs. He might bat 240. He's obviously a better Roto than a points league player. But he takes some walks. I don't know. But like going to Miami, remember, he had 48 home runs in Kansas City. So he could hit 40 home runs in Miami.
Yeah. Soler is one of those, you might get him at a very deep discount. So be very watchful in any league. And that includes the points. He's not severely ranked down in a points league. I have him 165th overall. That's pretty encouraging. I think the power can still play there. He hits it so far that it doesn't matter that he's in the wrong ballpark for it. But couple that with the fact that last year he started sluggish. 2020 wasn't quite up to the level of the huge home run total he had before that. I think there's a value point here. I like Soler. I wanted to get him yesterday, and he was expensive. He was very expensive. Rightfully.
Luke Voit in San Diego is going to play every day, we assume. I mean, they're not going to platoon him with Eric Hosmer. That'd be ridiculous. So there's your DH, one of them. Probably Voit.
Voit's not a path to playing time guy. It's a does he get hurt? But I like the landing spot. I mean, it's a downgrade in ballparks, but no one's going to be on Luke Voit. No one.
You seem very eager to sing, so why don't you do the closer carousel?
It's the closer carousel.
Well, we did not expect Kenley Jansen to end up in Atlanta. If you had already drafted or secured Will Smith to your teams, you're not happy because Jansen will be the closer. Mm-hmm. So,
and we mean Will Smith the closer, not Will Smith the catcher. You do want Will Smith the catcher.
You do want Will Smith the catcher and the French Prince, but not the Atlanta relief pitcher who is getting paid either way, whether he gets 35 saves or three. But we rarely talk about Kenley Jansen. Like he bounced back last season. It was a fine season, except for the walks.
Yep.
But are we worried about home runs in Atlanta? Are we worried about durability? Like, I just feel like I want to worry about Kenley Jansen. And I feel like I'd rather have Blake Treinen, who is the new closer with the Dodgers. We presume it could be Daniel Hudson. It could be a committee. So make the case for Blake Treinen over Kenley Jansen. Can you do it?
I can. I would want the promise that it's Treinen's job, or at least that when we say it's Treinen's job, it's in the Jake McGee style that began San Francisco's 2021. And I don't think we have it. Dave Roberts came in and said that it is a closer by committee. I don't know how much I buy what he's saying on that, but Treinen revived some of the skills he had in that very big season that was historic, if I recall, from an ERA perspective. I think it was 2018. It's not 2019, but I'd have to look it up. I'd say the skills were 90% snapped back to that level. That is better command than what Jansen showed last season. Jansen has kind of settled in at what he's been over the 2021 seasons, which is a very good closer, but it's not quite to the level of what we saw from Treinen. You can make the case. Yeah.
Blake Treinen had a 0.78 ERA in 2018 with Oakland, but he was really good last season with the Dodgers, over 72 and a third innings, great strikeout rate, 32 holds, sub 2 ERA. I'm expecting a big year out of him.
Do you agree with the committee, though? Do you agree with that strategy? Because Robert specifically said it's that he wants to use Treinen at that moment in the game that he most desires. And that's why I wonder whether he's treated the way McGee is and we should draft him accordingly. That he still gets 85, 90% of his
time. I don't believe him. I don't believe any manager who does, because no managers do it. So I think, first of all, he doesn't have a lefty he can trust for saves. So that goes out the window right there. I think Treinen's their closer. I think he gets 35 saves. I think he has a better year than Kenley Jansen. I want to rank it that way. I'm going to rank it that way. I can do whatever I want in the rankings. So that's what I'm going to do. I feel like Treinen is going to be healthier, more strikeout potential. I'm going with that.
I don't know that I'd make the healthier case. I don't think Jansen's the one that worries me that much. But I see your point about the skills.
I mean, the only other guy in that bullpen who I see getting saves would be Daniel Hudson, who has some closer experience, but I just don't see a committee there. I think it could be more likely in Atlanta because he Snitker loved Will Smith last year, and he's a lefty, and he's got power arms behind both of them. He's got better relief pitchers than his two co-closers in Atlanta. That's the thing.
He doesn't really have co-closers. I think it's Jansen's job.
I think it's Jansen's job, too.
Clearly,
my point being is this. The best relief pitchers in Atlanta's bullpen are probably like Tyler Matzek, AJ Minter when he's throwing strikes. Colin McHugh comes off a fine season. I don't think the best relief pitchers in Atlanta's bullpen are Jansen or Will Smith. So I
agree. I like that you said that because I actually am not sure. Well, I like Jansen a lot. I've always been a much bigger fan of Jansen than you are. But I'm with you that the most interesting and perhaps highest ceiling relievers in the Atlanta bullpen don't rank 1-2 in it. The thing that I don't like about in the LA situation is I think Brustar Graterol's got a future closing. And if he somehow had a great couple weeks here and then started the season hot, we could have a competition. Like last year. Remember, Corey Knebel made a competition in LA at the beginning of last year.
I suppose. But, I mean, Graterol had a lot of walks last year, and I just don't see him getting involved at all. He couldn't get lefties out. There was a lot of talk about him before last season.
It's a lot of work to be done. I'm saying that if it all clicks,
other moves that were made among bullpens in the last week that are relevant. And one of them is the White Sox. As long as Craig Kimbrell remains on the White Sox, I mean, I guess you could draft him the way I draft Devin Williams in Milwaukee and hope for 100 strikeouts in a setup role, but he's not going to get saves. And I got Devin Williams in Tat Wars this weekend, and I love it. It was a good price. Like, they may not deal Kimbrel.
They might not. Yeah, they were, and I know that La Russa was saying he's preparing as if Kimbrel's going to stay there. I think they're going to wait for whatever.
You moved him out of your top 20 among closers.
Because I am legitimately concerned that he is not going to get traded somewhere else and find himself a closer's job. I could give you some one-liner closer things just to get your thoughts on them if you like.
Sure.
Boston with Garrett Whitlock looking like he's got a pretty decent chance at a rotation spot.
I got to be honest with you. I've thought all along it's Matt Barnes.
Okay.
Maybe I'm with you on that. He was a closer last year, and then something happened right around the time that they switched the baseballs, and then he's sort of giving up home runs. But I think there's a loyalty factor. He's a strikeout guy. I think Matt Barnes all along this offseason has been their closer.
I would agree. I actually think Barnes is one of the better cheap sleeper saves guys. I like him quite a bit. Been targeting him. Angels signing Ryan Tepera and Archie Bradley. Is there anything relevant there, even as just an insurance policy for Iglesias?
No. Madden will never take Iglesias out of the closer role. He could give up homers in three straight games and he wouldn't do it. Iglesias never gets hurt. He's one of the most durable closers in the sport.
Okay.
And he gives up double-digit home runs every year and nobody ever cares. And Madden is not a guy, he's not as analytically inclined as people think he is. He's going to stick with Iglesias for every last save.
How about the Cubs adding the guys that did in Michael Givens and David Robertson?
I think that one is interesting because I've been assuming it's Rowan Wick. Mm-hmm. And now I think Givens is definitely in play there. And Wick has not been the healthiest cat around. That's the other thing.
I do too. Wick just doesn't excite me. He seems like filler relief and I could see him falling into setup duty. I would not be shocked either if Robertson emerged. I just don't know that he could stay entirely healthy.
I don't know why you think him. I mean, Givens is younger. He had a good year last year. He hasn't had injury problems. I think Givens is the guy.
He's the most likely. It's an adjustment that I'm going to make on this. I think it's the most likely outcome of the three, but that's one to keep an eye on. And what are the Reds doing? Lucas Sims is hurt. I don't think he's ready for opening day.
they're embarrassing themselves, honestly, with what they've been doing this offseason. I mean, like, they're not even trying to hide what they're doing, giving these players away. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think a lot of people were talking about Art Warren, who is this former Texas Ranger. He's 29. He comes off a solid season, a brief season. Mm-hmm. Man, I don't know. Luis Sessa's there.
I took Warren just because I feel like there's just some potential there based on the way he finished last year. But I agree. It's almost as if what's left, what's going to be.
I wouldn't bother taking anybody. And not only, I guess I would take a shot on Warren or Sessa or Justin Wilson, but like not until really late or for a dollar. I mean,
but anyway,
bad team. That's a 100 loss team now.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, if we know the teams that are really not going for it and they're all in the National League, if we look at Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, and I'm trying to think who the other Colorado
keep drafting David Bednar in Pittsburgh. One, that's an awful team. And two, I don't think he's the closer.
See, I like Bednar. I think Bednar.
Oh, I didn't say
superior
like him.
Pitcher to Stratton.
I didn't say I didn't like him, Tristan. I said, I don't think he's their closer.
Why not?
No. Because I think Stratton is the veteran guy who closed last year, who had important innings for them last year.
I can see that healthy Rowan Wick. He's okay.
Oh, I think Bednar is a much better pitcher than Rowan Wick and than Chris Stratton for that matter. But that's not what gets saves.
Yeah, that's true.
It's up to the whim of these managers.
That could be.
And by the way, you look at Pittsburgh's rotation. I don't know how they're going to even win 60 games. Jose Quintana, Bryce Wilson, Mitch Keller. It's time for us to give up on Mitch Keller. I know I'm saying that at the wrong time. I should have said it 2 years ago, but minor league numbers don't always translate, And then that lineup, I mean, Daniel Vogelbach's hitting cleanup.
Mitch Keller's breakthrough's happening once he's traded to the Rays about a year and a half from now.
Oh, he's cheap. Why would they trade him? That's the whole point. How is Chris Stratton still in Pittsburgh? I see your point about Bednar. I just think that sometimes relievers become popular buys in auctions and drafts when there's no guarantee of anything with them. And on some of these bad teams, I'm seeing Lucas Sims go a lot. And I'm like, what do you think is going to happen there? There's no loyalty to Lucas Sims getting saves. He may not even get any.
Yeah, I think these are teams that are very likely to lose 100. As I said, those three teams are clearly trying to lose, and I just don't think there's going to be saves there for them. And I just don't see a lot of excitement. I think he's a good pitcher. That's all.
I think he's a good pitcher too, but he's not a kid. He's like 27 now. I think I'd rather have Devin Williams or Kimbrel than David Bednar. Take the skills and hope that they get into some saves. And Bednar has skills too. But I'm just saying, like, the Lucas Sims thing, I just don't get it.
Would you like your weird fact of the day?
Sure.
The first nominee in Tal Wars NL this year was Devin Williams.
Yeah, because I think that's 100 strikeout relief pitcher. If they trade Hader or Hader finally gets hurt, Devin Williams would be a top 10 closer.
And I think the latter, much as I hate to say it, as a very big Josh Hader fan, is the one to keep an eye out for. I don't think they're trading Hader. They're contenders.
No, they're trying to contend. Well, they may not be in July. The point is, like,
right? Yeah, yeah.
You know, who knows?
Yeah.
But now with so many playoff teams, I mean, I can't see a scenario where they would trade him. I'm just saying, like, you want to talk about the top relief pitcher who's not getting saves? I mean, Devin Williams and Kimbrel.
Devin Williams is an amazing pitcher. Yeah,
yeah. That's right. I just think it's a good investment.
I wanted him as the number one bid, but he went a little bit more than I was comfortable with.
People don't understand, when you're looking at auctions, first of all, you have to practice before you get into an auction. Mm-hmm. Come in with a plan. I had a plan. You had a plan. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it goes, for both my auctions, it went exactly as I expected. And I got what I wanted. A lot of older players, a lot of playing time, maybe not a lot of upside. And Adam Wainwright on both teams, if he doesn't do what he did last year, I have a problem. But still, I did what I wanted to do. The point is, practice. Go to our site, go to another site, practice an auction, because it goes really fast. And it sometimes you're like,
yeah, they went real quick on these.
And you can't just say, oh, well, I know I will get this guy. I'll get Chris Bryant, or I'll get Josh Hader. Maybe you're only willing to pay $22 for Hader and he goes up to $26. Are you willing to pay $27? It happens all the time in these things. And we will have a mock draft this week, and not an auction, but like, you can practice your drafts as well. I mean, that's the best advice we can give.
Meanwhile, the guy who has, quote, no upside on his tout team is Wander Franco's manager. So, you know,
I got him.
I'm counting or anything here.
You know what?
I did something I almost never do.
So I already had Bo Bichette just because I like the price and I like the player. And my second player was Wander Franco. And I'm like, oh, now I'm out of bidding on shortstops the whole rest of the day.
Well,
but
not
Wander Franco with that price in an on-base percentage format, I had to. You love him. I love him. Mm-hmm. I like him more in points than I do Roto. That was my point on last show.
I'll bet after those two, you wished you hadn't paid for Bo Bichette.
I did. Because
you would have been much happier with Franco 22 and the cash in pocket.
But you know what happened? My approach led to having money at the end in labor. And I didn't want to do that again in tout. So I thought, I can afford a $30 player. And it worked perfectly. I didn't want to spend on starting pitching. I wanted like six or seven guys, all similar, should be durable. I have half of Houston's rotation, three of the six. You know, I'm happy with what I did. If it doesn't work, look, I always finish second. I just need a little luck to finish first. And I'm going to have to buy a bullpen in both leagues. And I like what you did as well.
You and I are both going to have to buy a bullpen in that, because the biggest takeaway I had from Tout NL was that, by the way, the catcher markup was outrageous.
In both these auctions, it was crazy. I wouldn't do it.
I've never seen anything like it. And why we're paying for it, for one of the pools that's been among the most historically awful I can remember, other than what, like 1988 or something? I mean, there were 10 catchers in the NL that went for $11+.
I would never do that.
Neither would I.
Couldn't do it. I can't even name that many. I can't even guess who they were other than the obvious guys. Like,
yeah,
I thought I did well in getting catchers on the cheap in both these auctions. Anyway,
you and I both did. I think that was one I was pleased with. But you and I both ended up not paying for the saves because I think they got marked up. And in the NL, you did it in labor. It's just the NL closer pool is kind of putting a bow on our little section here. Just it's not that comfortable. It's not comforting.
No. And I don't want to waste $15 on a guy who may or may not get saves. I'd rather waste five.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I kept doing. Robert Suarez, I have in both leagues of the Padres.
If
he gets 25 saves, I look great. If he gets zero, it was only $3. It's not a big deal.
That was one of the ones I wanted. I couldn't get him.
You know, you're guessing on the Giants bullpen and maybe the Cardinals, but even bullpens you think you know on good teams. I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
All right, I want to bring in Kyle now because he's got our hash browns and he will ask the questions and we will give the answers.
Of course, I got you covered. Daniel wants to know if you're back on the Dominic Smith bandwagon this year.
With that little note that we got, that nugget over the past week on Dominic Smith?
What was the nugget? Did he a homer in his first spring game? Is that what it took?
No, actually, it was a pretty actionable piece. He There was a story out that he had a partial labrum tear in his shoulder last year and he was playing through it. So in addition to the other two injuries he had during the season, that was one that kind of dogged him all year. But I will add the extra piece. And this is what I puzzle the people are ignoring. It's not gone away necessarily.
More played appearances this season, Dominic Smith or Robinson Cano?
Dominic Smith. Well,
I don't think you should be fairly certain of that.
I'm not.
Cano's going to be their DH, their regular DH for them.
I see a path where Cano is their DH, and this is the Ken Griffey Jr. final year. We're on May 10th. It's time to release him and just eat the money.
He's going to struggle.
I don't know. It's a team contextual thing. If Robinson Cano bats 280 for you and he hits no power at all, is that a good player? Is that a player you want on your roster playing every day? I have to ask that.
Or the Mets.
The
Mets are going to play him at DH, I think. And I think he's going to end up hitting like 270 with 20 home runs. I can't tell you that Dominic Smith's going to do that.
I'll take the under on the 20 home runs, every day of the week. I just don't think the power's there. He didn't hit for any power during the winter league, and he never was a big time lift the ball kind of guy. That's what I'm worried about.
I'm probably ignoring both these guys, to be honest.
I'm intrigued on Smith, but he's got to be cheap.
Fair enough. The guy you're not ignoring, John, wants to know if Alex Bregman, top 35 in Roto this year.
Probably more likely in points than Roto. No longer a stolen base guy, still a walk guy. Obviously, he was injured last season, had surgery. What was it? His wrist, his shoulder? It was his wrist. Surgery. We have to assume that he's fine now, but it was a wrist. Some wrists never heal. Mine didn't. So are we all overrating Alex Bregman as a guy who could hit 25 home runs and bat 300? He probably is going to fall below that. And if he does, then he's not a fourth-round pick or third-round pick in Roto, that's for sure.
If he's a healthy player, I think he meets that homer projection with ease and bats somewhere in the 280s with the possibility it's better. But there's some ifs in that statement. And I think I'll just leave it at that. I haven't gotten him yet.
I have some concerns that we hope the wrist heals. But he was a guy, could we really count on for consistent power year after year on Bregman?
It was one big year. It was one big year that were fueled by some
outside stuff.
Generous. I think they were just generous underlying metrics. I think he got very fortunate on fly balls. And by the way, that happens in Houston. Pull righty power is played up.
You know what he could be? Here's a comp for you. Why can't Bregman be Xander Bogaerts? Bogaerts doesn't hit 30 home runs and he doesn't run. But every year he's a consistent, 300 hitter who gives you power and you know what you're getting. Why can't Bregman do that?
I guess it's about right. I think Bogaerts is a better player than you do.
Oh no, but I definitely perceive he's a bad player. I like him.
I'm not saying he's a bad player, but my perception from what you have said about Xander Bogaerts in the show is I think Xander Bogaerts is I have a higher opinion of him. I think he's a very good player.
Xander Bogaerts is a 300 hitter, 25 and 100. Why can't Bregman do that consistently?
A healthy Bregman could do that consistently.
That's my point.
I don't think it's better than that. And I think there are more questions about is he healthy of the two of them than Bogaerts. And I think it's by a pretty decent share.
I agree with that. Doesn't mean I don't like Bogaerts. I'm ranked like 25, Tristan. I like him a lot.
No, okay, good. Then we both, yeah. Then,
that's not
then
what I'm
this
saying.
This is our way of celebrating Xander Bogaerts, as Xander Bogaerts is probably one of the values you get at 40, 45.
He's always
that we're
a
both
value.
On board.
He's a value in Roto and points. I'm trying to say Bregman might be a value as well.
Okay.
All right. Next.
Brendan wants to go the Eric Carabao way of waiting for pitchers. What pitchers do you have ranked in the 30 to 50 range that you find yourself landing most consistently?
Yeah, that's all I've been getting in these two auctions and drafts. I've been waiting on pitchers. Let me see if I can find my rankings. I'm sure they're up somewhere. Where are they? Okay, here they are. Adam Wainwright. Let's start there. I refuse to believe, okay, and I don't want to get back to the Nelson Cruz argument from last week. But I refuse to believe that Adam Wainwright can be an awesome top 10 pitcher at 39 years old, and he can't recreate it at 40. I'm not saying he's top 10. I'm not. I'm ranked like 40-something. Let me see where I have him ranked. I have him as the number 40 starting pitcher. My point is, why can't he do that again? And I think he can. He's not an injury risk. He's not throwing too hard. Adam Wainwright is my number one guy. I am ranked at number 40, and that I probably should move him up to 30 because I keep getting him. Who else? Yeah, I got to update these because
you're literally saying Wainwright won't do it again this year because he was the number nine starting pitcher.
Don't take
I know. I'm just telling you. I like your 40. I'm not saying
he'll end up top 10, but I'm saying he could. And we haven't ranked. I haven't ranked number 150 overall. I'm going to get him in every league there because nobody else wants him.
If you put him 40 and you're asking, is he meeting number 40? Yes, I think that's totally reasonable.
I'm moving him up to like 35 as soon as the show ends.
I think that's probably totally reasonable.
Couple of these guys I don't want as much anymore, including McCullers, who I know is missing time.
Yep.
Including Gallen, who's again dealing with a shoulder. Tyler Molly of the Reds, I keep getting a lot of strikeouts. Maybe not the best whip, but it's a lot of strikeouts. And he might only win seven games in the Reds, but he'll still miss a lot of bats. Pablo Lopez, I keep getting. I'm going to move this guy down. I'm going to move Bassett down. The Astros, apparently I like Astros pitchers. Luis Garcia. Why does nobody think he can do that again? John Gray, John Snow, the Rangers. How about that? Urquidy. I like Urquidy. You don't like John Gray anymore? Why?
I just think you're taking too automatic. Everything becomes right for him getting out of course. I wouldn't be surprised
if
it's an adjustment.
I'm not saying that. I think he's a strikeout guy.
Where do you have him?
Well, I'm ranking him at 49 among starting pitchers, but I want to move him up. I think he's a guy, a dark horse sleeper for 200 strikeouts, if healthy. I love the ballpark change. I mean, he's not going to a neutral park. He's going to an extreme pitcher's park. He's already a strikeout guy. He did not have severe home road splits like all the hitters. He was a guy who had better home numbers than road, which tells me he can overcome any ballpark. To me, John Gray now is actually a legit sleeper.
And 49 intrigues me. Once you know, every spot you take higher than that, I'm a little hesitant. And that there isn't really any sample to compare him to of pitchers leaving Coors Field and what they do after that. And I'm sorry, Ubaldo Jimenez just does not count for me. The stuff changed when that happened. I don't think it has for John Gray. We'll see. I don't know.
I like Logan Gilbert of Seattle. I like Joe Ryan of Minnesota. I like Di Scalfani. I'm ranking terribly. I need to move him way up. I have him at 62. He's going to end up at 42 by the end of the day. I like Cal Quantrill more than Savali and Plasek. Nope, I'm not taking a Philly. I understand what Ranger Suarez did last season was interesting. He's not doing that again. I think his ceiling is actually like a 350 ERA. He's not on my sleeper. I'm not taking any Phillies pitchers for that matter. Hey, what guys do you have in your 30 to 50 range that you would recommend?
So a lot of the same names that you've been mentioning. I agree with you on Garcia. I'm glad you mentioned him. He's one that I think belongs here. Lopez does as well. I'm on board. Shane Baz is one who I have in that range.
Yep. Not a lot of innings. That's like 130 innings on Shane Baz.
Yeah, it's not a lot of innings, but I think his stuff is a little bit more top shelf than even Shane McClanahan, who has the similar question. And if things really do click, I can see a path to 150, 160 innings of excellence. And that's the chance I want to take in that tier. The problem, Tarik Skubal is, by the way, one you didn't mention. I'm pro Skubal could break through this year, but be careful. He's a very popular and trendy sleeper. But I'm going to know, I feel like this is the layup territory by the question. Sorry to criticize the question. It's just like these are the
we
want to dive one tier below this.
I know the answer to this question based on the pitchers I keep getting. By the way, here's a pitcher I'm not going to get anymore, and I'm going to stay out of politics in this. I'm going to watch my words. I'm out on Trevor Bauer because I think baseball is out on Trevor Bauer. I don't think they want him to pitch, and I don't think the Dodgers want him to pitch. And I could see a scenario here where they just keep extending his. Whatever they're doing, they haven't even suspended him yet. I am out. I'm moving him out of my top 200. I think the skills are there to be a top 100 pitcher, a top 10 pitcher, but it's pretty clear he's not pitching in April. And I wonder if they just find a way out of the contract. And again, I'm going to try to watch my words.
Find a way out of the contract.
Well, maybe they'll pay it, but I don't think they want him around. And the point for fantasy baseball, Buster can deal with, Trevor Bauer. The point here for us is. I am no longer ranking Bauer in my top 200 because I don't think he's going to pitch enough. And that's the bottom line. Do you have something else to say?
I don't think
let's keep our jobs.
I don't think there's anything quote political to go on to the story. People are asking us whether we can and should draft him.
We don't know whether MLB is going to hand down some sort of penalty, and we don't know whether the Dodgers are going to welcome him back right after that. And I suspect there's going to be some period of absence at the beginning of the year, and I don't like to roster players like that. I'm with you. He's outside my top 200. He's 277 and 99th among starters. And I can very easily tell you that's too aggressive. By the way, I'll give you the three that are in the tier below.
Yeah,
see, go ahead. See if you where yours stood on these.
Don't say Noah Syndergaard.
No, absolutely not. I'm not a Noah Syndergaard.
I don't even know you if you say that.
Tristan McKenzie is number one. Patrick Sandoval is number two. And Tanner Houck is number three.
What you did the Tanner Houck thing last summer. What are you seeing there? I don't even see opportunity.
He's in the rotation.
He's definitely in the rotation.
He's in the rotation.
All right. He was like a 4 2/3 inning pitcher last year. Do you think that's changing?
Why are we comfortable drafting Shane McClanahan and Shane Baz then?
I'm not. I think their numbers will be elite. But I don't know if we're going to get the same with Houck. Now, I look at Boston's rotation right now, and with Sale out, it's Nick Pivetta is their number two. So it's bad. Eovaldi, Pivetta, Houck, Michael Wacha, Rich Hill, maybe Whitlock, maybe at some point Paxton, Sale, maybe after a month. I just hope that Cora lets Houck go more than five innings. He didn't do it last year. It's hard to win games that way, and you give up one or two runs, and your ERA is already over four.
Okay, so again, to the point of digging beneath the tier of this question, where do you have Houck ranked? 85th, 90th?
I don't know. Probably not as well as you do. Let me look.
Because what I'd then ask you is, you really don't want to take that chance compared to some of the guys you have near him?
No, I think obviously there are some pitchers I rank ahead of him, and I got to move him down. Like, I don't want any part of Carlos Carrasco anymore. I got to change that.
Yeah, but it's not a question of like which rankings need to change. It's philosophically we're talking about the tier.
I think he's average. I think he's just kind of average.
How?
I think if Whitlock and Houck are both in the rotation, and they let them both go to 150 innings, I'd rather have Whitlock than Houck. You disagree by this
I would picks. Rather have Houck.
Okay.
I mean,
we're not going to bet. This doesn't make any sense. I don't know if either one of them are going to get a chance at 100 innings.
I completely see your point. I'm wondering whether Houck is a little bit more prepared to absorb the increase that's required to put forth the fantasy numbers. I think that's what it is for me. I like Whitlock. I think he's a very good pitcher, but I'm wondering whether this transition makes him Houck 2021-ish.
By the way, am I wrong on Pivetta? Where do you rank him? I mean, you know, like, no, I want to be fair.
84th. He's actually one behind Houck.
Why?
And ahead of Elijah.
There's obvious strikeout potential, and they like him, and they think he's added a pitch or something. Is it the Phillies angle that I refuse to respect Nick Pivetta?
Yeah, it is. You made that real clear last year on the show, and I totally get that.
Well, no, and that's you know not what fair. It's somebody in my business can't be doing that. If Nick Pivetta is going to end up with the same number as Taiwan
Walker, you never
gave
Pivetta credit for anything he did last year. I get it, but like he did have those brief moments, and we didn't know when they were happening. But he had some moments last year.
He had his moments, and he also ended up with a 4.53 ERA.
Yeah, I know. There's a reason he's 84th. I don't think he's that great a pitcher, but he contributes a little something, and you know he's going to be their number two starter.
No, I should move him up. By the way, it's
kind of horrifying that he's their number two starter.
Well, it's three when Sale's healthy, but yes, that's.
But Sale's not healthy.
Well, it's a broken rib. He's not, you know, he's going to come back.
Yeah.
It's not Tommy John surgery, like where he's out of indefinitely. All right, what else we got?
We got one more question here before we call it a day. Jared wants you both to give me a prospect that you think holds nice value in redraft leagues this year.
I am not getting any prospects right now. All right, let's discuss Julio Rodriguez because he looks like a monster for the Mariners in spring training. And they don't really, they're playing Jared Kelnick, much to Dave Schoenfield's dismay, in center field. And they probably shouldn't. Kelnick doesn't look like a center fielder. But Julio Rodriguez, will he make the team? I mean, he's a top prospect. You and I traded him in our league that we're doing together, which is...
Yes.
I already regret it. I already do. I know Steve Gardner listens to this show. I don't think they fleeced us. I don't remember what we got. We got Brandon Lau. We got Jose Barrios. We did well in the trade, but Julio Rodriguez is going to be a monster in a keeper league. And we gave him up for like three or four lesser players. That was a mistake. We shouldn't have done it.
I don't agree. I still like that trade. I still like the trade a lot. Give me Brandon Lau out of that trade.
if Julio Rodriguez makes the Mariners, he's going to have a better year than Brandon Lau.
The team was not aligned in order to win year over year. It would have been foolish of us not to take a team that's built to win today.
I'm saying if Julio makes this year's Mariners,
that trade was the correct move every time.
You don't think if Julio makes the Mariners, he will have a better year than Brandon Lau.
That's my point. I do not think he will have a better year than Brandon Lau.
All right.
I think Lau is going to have the superior 2021. I love Julio
2022.
Yeah.
That's important.
That's my version of signing the checks wrong.
You still write checks? Believe it. I have one company I have to write checks, and I finally emailed them. I'm like, enough. I don't want any more checks. I'll Venmo you.
Anyway. I'm a member of an organization that wants checks for the paperwork, and I keep debating that with the treasurer of said organization. So,
Rodriguez, we have to move him up in our rankings into the top one.
Oh, I don't know. We have Bobby Witt. You're being way optimistic on Rod. Really? You guys the narrative on the. Why would they put him there? Kelnick's going to play first.
If he bats 400 this spring, they have no choice. They don't.
Where's he playing? Where's he playing? Digging it up right now as we look.
All right. So Haniger's in right and Winker's in left.
Yep. Okay. Kelnick's in center.
They're forcing Kelnick to center. They do not have to play Abraham Toro every day at DH. Okay. They don't. So there's a DH spot sitting there where they could dump Jesse Winker, who's a terrible defensive player.
Yeah.
Julio Rodriguez could be their left fielder and cleanup hitter right now. There's nothing blocking him. Now, there's no center fielder on the roster. That's a problem. But also, Haniger's not signed long-term. They can deal him tomorrow to Atlanta or anybody they want that's trying. So I just don't tell me Julio Rodriguez's skills are elite. If he bats 400 this spring with 8 home runs, he's making the team. Same with Bobby Witt. They will force their way onto the team.
Well, Witt is considerably better odds of making his team than Rodriguez.
I agree. But Seattle's trying to win now, man. So if Julio Rodriguez if Julio Rodriguez bats 400 this spring and Kelnick hits 150, Rodriguez has to play over him. They have to do that.
But that's your heart making this decision. No, that's your heart making this decision that you and I always want that player who looks amazing during spring training to be on the team. And when Chris Bryant did it, he wasn't on the Cubs on opening day. And I really hope
it was 2 weeks. It was not a big deal. You can't give me the Chris Bryant argument.
Chris Bryant was absolutely tremendous.
Yes, he played after 2 weeks. He was up in mid-April. If they do the same thing with Rodriguez, that's fine. I can wait 2 weeks. It's a DL stint. It's no big deal.
Julio Rodriguez has 46 games experience in double-A ball.
I'm not saying I think he'll make the team. I think Seattle has to think about it if he continues the mash.
No question. And to your point about how great he could be, this could be this year's Juan Soto. You remember where Juan Soto was at? He had a comparable level of experience as this. And if he is amazing and opens eyes to that level like you're describing, then yes, all on board and it will happen. And I love the player. He's going to be great, but the odds of that happening are not especially good.
Other prospects that we would draft right now, I can't think of a whole lot, man, who are going to make a team.
Witt's got to be one.
Yeah, but Rutschman's not making the Orioles. He may not have anyway. Torkelson, I don't think he's making the Tigers, is he?
He's got a shot. Baz is probably one because he's rookie.
Baz will be in the rotation, but it'll be handled with extreme care. Josh Lowe's not making Tampa yet until they DFA
Kiermaier. Get rid of Kiermaier, which the complication.
Detmers will make the Angels, but he's kind of average, I think.
Actually, Detmers had a pretty encouraging last start. I'm going to try and review the tape of that, and I've got him noted down to watch the next start. There could be something there. He's got a good K rate.
All right, there you go.
Throw you a couple others. Riley Green.
He's not.
I think we might
see
Riley Green as quickly as we see Torkelson.
Oh, I don't think there's a comp there. Do you?
No, I'm talking about the proximity thing. I think we could see Riley Green contributing for this team as quickly and maybe arguably quicker than we see Torkelson.
I think Detroit sees a pathway to a wild card. I do. And I look at their lineup. I mean, you got to play Bedu and Grossman, but center field's open. You can force Bedu to play there. Victor Reyes doesn't have to play. So, yes, you could see Green make the team. And right now, DH is Miguel Cabrera. They're getting into that Pujolsian place where they almost have to sit the guy.
Well, he's I think he could contribute a little bit more now than where Pujols was, say, a year ago. But you're right.
Torkelson could be the DH or first baseman. He'd be the first. He's better first baseman than Cabrera. Yeah. So that's – and Detroit's trying. Look at the moves they made.
I think Torkelson and Green – the odds of Torkelson and Green being on the opening day Tigers lineup are also – they're a hair – well, not a hair. They're a level ahead of where Rodriguez is from the previous – yeah, I think it's a noticeable jump.
I agree with that.
But the one I'd put on Rodriguez's level is Tristan Casas with the Red Sox, because signing story now complicates that. There was some chatter about that last week.
Why does it complicate it? He's playing second base. They didn't have a second baseman. So
where's Casas playing?
Not
playing time.
Bobby Dalbec's their first baseman.
Bobby Dalbec's been great. He's been tearing it up with
He's underrated. That's a 30 home run guy that, and everybody's talking about Casas.
He's a four.
But no, the Trevor Story signing didn't affect Christian Casas at all, did it? Who was going to play second? I don't see.
I'm trying.
And by the way, they have room. Jackie Bradley's not going to play every day, so they have room to promote Casas and play him in right if they have to, or play him at
DH.
I'm
trying to remember what their strategy was for that. There was something I read about it that made sense to me, and I might just be missing it.
All right.
Duh. How could I forget that? O'Neill Cruz.
He really making the team? I don't know. I don't see that happening. I guess
he should.
He debuted last year. That's a 20 homer guy who can steal bases.
That might be a 30 homer guy who can steal bases.
That lineup is horrific. Like O'Neill Cruz could bat third for them right now.
Yeah, like O'Neill Cruz needs to be playing because I think he's ready to show what he can do. I'm not sure that that's in the Pirates' financially best interest, and I'm not getting into that with them and their decisions with that, but Cruz needs to be playing, and he does have ridiculous power.
It's the worst lineup in baseball. Yoshi Tsugo, Vogelbach, Anthony Alford, Ben Gamel, that's their outfield. Oh my god.
Actually, I really like the Vogelbach pickup for them. That tells me a lot about the Pirates.
I think that's a potential 20 home run guy, and if batting average isn't your thing and on bases, then Vogelbach is fine.
I was so mad in Towers that Vogelbach made it to the reserve draft and I didn't have a high enough draft position because that was the piece I was going to get at the end.
Stop this show because it's a long one. I want to say that I am winning our men's tournament challenge between the three of us, but I'm sure Kyle thinks he can come back and win.
Just you wait.
Tristan's in last of the three of us, and no question about that.
Am I in last overall? No.
I'm in the 92nd percentile. I didn't even look over the weekend. So I had Iowa in the Final Four. I got Villanova in the title game. So
hey, UVA is still going to win this tournament, right?
No, they're not. I do want to say this in all seriousness, and I'll try not to choke up, but rest in peace to our friend and former colleague, John Clayton, the professor. He passed unexpectedly this past weekend. A great, dedicated family man with an unbelievable work ethic. I will remember John fondly. All right. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I'm adding that. Met him, did a couple shows with him. One of the nicest, genuinely nicest people I've ever met in Wordsworth.
Yeah, good guy.
He will definitely be missed.
We are planning to do a show on Thursday, but we'll see what happens. We'll tweet it out. Kyle will tweet it out, and we'll do hash browns, and maybe Conforto will sign by then. Who else is still out there that has to sign? That's important.
Other than Conforto, I'll tell you right off this list. That would be gotta love when my spreadsheets are crashing. Richard Rodriguez. He retired.
He's not
Tommy Pham.
Oh, that's interesting.
Tommy Pham's one, and not an awful lot less. Jed Lowry.
Nope. So most everybody is off the list now, which is good. So we can focus. There'll be a mock draft this week, and we're covering lots of stuff. I'll have my do not draft list. Take it apart if you want. See what the headline looks like. That is all for today's show. Thank you so much for listening to Fantasy Focus Baseball. For Tristan and Kyle, please have an awesome week.